Okay. You have to see. Once you have to see. Okay. The half of the Kollel, when the Saint Rabbi Leibowitz for the beautiful Shiurim, we are zochet to hear Friday night, Shabbos morning, Shabbos afternoon, Kallel Shudis, Motzei Shabbos, and now today, all the Shiurim were full of chokhen, full of warmth, full of understanding. Interesting that when we discuss right now the topic of weapons in the shul, it's a resonant topic. As we know, throughout the country it's a resonant topic. Everybody, all the shuls after Pittsburgh, every had their crisis Sunday meetings or whatever it is, because we had to all bolster security. And it's interesting to point out when you, some of you did the Makoros, but the question of bringing weapons into the shul is not only circa 2019. The question of Rabbi Stern once pointed out that after 9/11 we got a knock on the door. We were in Westwood, and it was a police officer wanting to make sure everything was all right. So Rabbi Stern pointed out in a very poignant way that usually when you get a knock on the door in Jewish history from somebody with a uniform, over the course of history, it usually wasn't a police officer wanting to make sure that everything's all right. Usually it was far more insidious and far more dangerous. We are living in very secure times. In very secure times in a relative sense. But yet, because we're so used to living with that sense of security, our sense of vulnerability is greatly heightened when even statistically insignificant but yet very significant events happen. We all feel the vulnerability. I was having a conversation with my children in Lakewood. I was telling them how, you know, people I know, they're carrying and are thinking of carrying, et cetera, packing, carrying, whatever the lishonos are. And the conversation was, what, you think anybody in Lakewood is doing that? And certainly people in Lakewood are doing that. There's no doubt. But people live in their own sense of reality. I think we all have that sense of being shaken. And that's why CSS and security has become greatly heightened. And we have to therefore understand how to negotiate the halacha and negotiate the hashkafa and figure out where the correct balance is. Yehi ratzon that this is only should be halacha v'lo l'maisa in terms of having to use any of these items, but we should also know what the halacha says. Be'ez Hashem, the tchus, our Talmud Torah, v'zoche, to Yemei HaShalom, Yimei HaShalva, and Rez Hashem, we should be zoche to be as God said it, Umher v'yameinu. Pleasure and honor to ask somebody with me to share with that beautiful
power. Thank you very much again, Rabbi Brander, and thank you for what was really a beautiful Shabbos. It was such a treat to be able to spend time with you and to be able to get to know you better and see the beautiful example of Talmud Torah and of Midos Tovos. And personal hanhaga that you set for the entire kehila. I just want to apologize in advance. As soon as the shiur is over, my wife is picking me up to go return the rental car and go to the airport, so I'm not going to be able to stick around and schmooze very much after the shiur. So my apologies in advance for that. This topic of weapons in a shul, something that I first became interested in after the Har Nof massacre. We all remember, unfortunately, I remember in the East Coast it was waking up to the news. Probably over here you were going to sleep to the news, but were having a hard time sleeping because of the news. But waking up to that news of the terrible, terrible massacre that occurred in Har Nof. And I remember hearing at the time people saying that the terrorists knew exactly what kind of shul they were walking into. They knew that they were walking into a shul where there were people that were not armed, and therefore the best defense they would have is to throw shtenders or sidurim or whatever they're able to get their hands on, which begged the question, is it appropriate to make sure that there are people who are armed in every shul in a way that we can defend ourselves in more effectively. And of course, this topic was revisited again, as Rabbi Brander mentioned, after what we saw happened in Pittsburgh. And unfortunately, this is very much Nogel Lamaisa. And there have been a number of different mahalchim practically in terms of what's best. And it should be said at the outset, as far as practically, what's the best way to make sure that our shuls are secured, that has to be decided in close consultation with local law enforcement, and they can advise. Clearly, I know in the five towns, we had a meeting with the Nassau County Police Department, and they advised the different mahalchim, the different approaches. You know, there are those that suggested that every shul hire a security guard, which seems to be the minhag in Los Angeles over here, that there's a separate security guard. There are those who suggested, no, it's dafka, it should be people from the shul who recognize who belongs and who doesn't, that should be armed and in the shul, and that way, if chas v'shalom, someone wants to come and attack, they won't be able to identify who the one person that's armed is, like you would by a security guard. Different mahalchim, and it should always be done in close consultation with local law enforcement. We're not going to really discuss the practical benefits, because I'm not an expert in that, nor do I know much about it. We're going to discuss purely halacha. That's today's topic. We're going to be discussing the halacha of carrying a weapon in shul. It should also be said, al derech hakdama, that when it comes to carrying a weapon in shul, or when it comes to any potential iser, if there is pikuach nefesh involved, if there's a legitimate situation of pikuach nefesh, the risk rises to the level of pikuach nefesh, where there's a risk of human life, then there's no doubt that whatever the iser may be, the iser would be waived in favor of pikuach nefesh. There are very few isurim that are not waived for pikuach nefesh. As Gemara tells us in Masechta Sanhedrin and elsewhere, that there are only three that are yehareg v'al yavar, and that are that were not docha v'yisur mipnei pikuach nefesh. There may be more than three, Sot daf yud and Mabakama, but there aren't that many. There are a number of yisurim that even b'makom pikuach nefesh we're not going to be docha, but certainly carrying a weapon in shul, if there's mamish situation with pikuach nefesh, there would be no doubt. You know, similar to Rabbi was just telling me that you know, like the Gemara says, that a woman is not allowed to carry weapons because it's a violation of klei gever. So Rav Meisha has a tshuva in, I think, the 8th volume of Igros Meisha, but Rav Meisha has a tshuva for women who live in the shtachim and need for security to carry. So Rav Meisha says, then there's nothing to talk about. So that should be, said at the outset. And if it's determined to be an actual legitimate situation with pikuach nefesh, that is not our discussion either. The question is, what if it's not actually, let's say, statistically pikuach nefesh, assuming that whether something is pikuach nefesh is defined by statistics, which is an assumption. Well, let's assume it's defined by statistics, and one would probably suggest that nowadays, statistically, it would not be a pikuach nefesh situation to carry a weapon in shul, but it might make people feel better. It might make people feel more secure. People may want to do it anyway outside hayoter tov, to feel that they're a little bit more secure. So that's our topic. Is it permissible to carry a weapon in shul, and under what circumstances? So we're going to discuss essentially three things. First of all, where did this come from? Where did this idea come from that there's a problem? Who said, you know, there's no discussion of whether I'm allowed to carry other items in shul? Why would it be that a weapon is an issue? Where's the Gemara? Where's the pasuk? Where's the basis for this iser? And if it's a svara, where else do we find applications of that same svara? And also we have to figure out, as part of the basis, part of the source of it, does everyone agree to that source? Does everyone agree that in fact this is a problem? Is this subject to some sort of machlokes? So that's issue number one that we're going to discuss. We're going to spend some time on that. Issue number two is, what is the nature of this iser? Assuming that there is such an iser, which, spoiler alert, Shulchan Aruch says that there is such an iser. So assuming there is such an iser, what is the nature of the iser? Is this an iser in Dinei Beis HaKnesses, cover for a Beis HaKnesses? Or is this a din in Dinei Tfila? That is Hilchos Tfila, that you're not allowed to daven when you have a weapon on you. So what might be the nafkaminas between this? So a couple of obvious nafkaminas. Let's say you're davening at home. You're not davening in a Beis HaKnesses. Or you're coming into a Beis HaKnesses, but not to daven, for some other reason. So is one allowed to have a weapon in those circumstances? And then the third thing we're going to discuss, what are the exceptions to the Isser? Aside from Pikuach Nefesh, when else might we be matir carrying a weapon in shul? And then Bez Hashem to discuss a little bit at the end, what about the Hilcho Shabbos element of this? Carrying a weapon on Shabbos, what kind of, how does that change the equation, if at all, in terms of carrying weapons? So the starting point for this, and really every halacha, is the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef in Or HaChaim Sim Kufnun Aleph, normally the way the Beis Yosef operates is he'll point you to the Gemara or the several sugyos and shas that are the source for a particular issue, particular halacha, and then he'll develop it through how the Rishonim understand that Gemara and decide on the halacha, and then in Shulchan Aruch he'll just very bekitzer tell you what the halacha is. Beis Yosef will be here, does not quote a Gemara. Apparently there is no Gemara in Shas that says that you're not allowed to carry a weapon in shul. Beis Yosef instead quotes, and if you look, you have the Marmakom here in source number one, Kosov Va'orchos Chaim, the Orchos Chaim writes in Ilchus Beis HaKnesses B'Shem Haram, in the Tashbeit Katan, Sha'asuli Kanit L'Beis HaKnesses B'Sakin Aruch, that you're not allowed to walk into a shul with a long knife, L'Fishat Tfila Ma'areches Yamav Shaladam V'Asakin Mekatsram. Because tefillah lengthens a person's life, and a knife shortens a person's life, and it's not appropriate to juxtapose those two things that have opposite impacts on a person's life. And that's why we don't bring a sakin aruch into the Beis HaKnesses. Says the Beis Yosef, V'igia alav Rabbeinu Peretz, but Rabbeinu Peretz disagrees, Miu ein lofush ki im begilei arosh. Such a strange comment. Rabbeinu Peretz says we should only be concerned about Gilei Arosh. What's Gilei Arosh? Uncovering your head. Well, what does that do? Bring a weapon into shul. It's like the first half of the sentence, the second half of the sentence, they don't even connect. They're not talking about the same thing. Don't bring a weapon into shul. No. It's all about Gilei Arosh. What does Gilei Arosh have anything to do with bringing a weapon into shul? And then he quotes Maseches Sofrin, Kasuv, Misha Rosh Megula Lo Yotzei Haskara Mipiv. That someone who has his head uncovered is not supposed to say the Shem Hashem. The person doesn't say a bracha, we discussed yesterday, with their head uncovered. So with their head uncovered, you're not supposed to say the Shem Hashem. What on earth is going on over here? Beis Yosef has essentially three comments. Comment number one has no relationship to comment number two. Comment number two has some relationship to comment number three. Right? Comment number one is, according to the Ram, that you don't go into the Beis HaKnesses with a weapon. Comment number two is, the Rabbeinu Peretz, no, just Begilei Arosh, you don't go in. And then comment number three, the Maseches Sofrim, once we're talking about Gilei Arosh, that you shouldn't say a bracha with Gilei Arosh. So how exactly do we understand what's going on over here? And really what we have to figure out is the Beis Yosef suggesting this is a machlokas? Meaning the issue of not going in with a weapon, is this a machlokas between the Rishonim? Is Rabbeinu Peretz saying, no, there's no isser of weapon. The only isser is Gilei Arosh. Was Rabbeinu Peretz saying, whatever you want to say about a weapon, that's fine. But let me tell you, in addition, you should just be aware, Kavod Beis HaKnesses, you shouldn't go in with Gilei Arosh. But that there just happened to be two dinim in Kavod Beis HaKnesses. But there's no machlokas here. So Rav Avadya Yosef understands that this must be a machlokas. Why? Because in Shulchan Aruch, if you look in source number two, Shulchan Aruch writes, Shulchan Aruch writes in the second line over there, V'yesh osrim likanes bo b'sakin aruch o b'rosh megula. That there are those who aser coming into shul with a weapon or with your head uncovered. What does that imply? There are those yesh osrim. That it must be a machlokas. Not everyone agrees. So says Rav Avadya Yosef, clearly the way the Shulchan Aruch understood is that it's a machlokas between the Rabbeinu Peretz and the Orchos Chaim. And the Rabbeinu Peretz would hold it's fine to go in with a weapon. And the Orchos Chaim would say it's fine to go with your head uncovered. And the Mechaber is just being machmir like both opinions. So he quotes each one as a yesh osrim because it's not muskam l'chaladeus, it's not something that's agreed upon by everybody. However, Tzitz Eliezer points out in the Tshuva in Chelet Yud Simin Yud Ches, not in your Maramakomus over here, he says, I don't know if that's true, that just because it says yesh osrim, that it means that there's a machlokas. What might be another explanation of why it says Yesh Osrim as opposed to just telling me the halacha. Meaning, if there's no known machlokas about this, why would you say Yesh Osrim? Just tell me the halacha. Where does Yesh Osrim come in? So says to Eliezer, this has nothing to do with whether there's a machlokas or not. Sometimes you'll have a comment that's made by one Rishon, and other Rishonim don't talk about it. They don't say yay, they don't say nay, they don't say anything, they just don't talk about it. So sometimes you'll have the Mechaber will quote it as Lashon of Yesh Omrim, even though it may be that everyone agrees. It's just nobody talks about it except for this one source. And in fact, the Sma in Choshe Mishpat and Siman Tes Zayin, Sivkat and Ches, initially thinks that the Mechaber writes Yesh Omrim when there's only one Deah that says it explicitly, but the Mechaber has a problem with it. He thinks that there's something to debate about it, even though he can't find anyone that comments one way or the other, except for this one opinion, the Mechaber has a problem with it. But then the Sma says, it doesn't mean the Mechaber has a problem with it. It just means the Mechaber didn't find it anywhere else, that the Shulchan Aruch didn't find it anywhere else, that it just says, so he'll say, Yesh Osrim, if it's only found in one Rishon, even though Ein Pikpuk Bedavar, even though there is no one that disagrees. Now the Sman, Choshe Mishpat and Siman Reish Yud Aleph, says that sometimes the Mechaber will write Yesh Misha Omer because it's something that's derived from a comparison to another halacha, as opposed to something that's direct. But what you do see is that it's very difficult, says Tzitz Eliezer, to be medayek from the word Yesh Osrim that this is in fact the machlokes. So essentially what we have so far is we have a definite statement of the Aruch HaShem that you're not allowed to bring weapons into shul, and we have a machlokes whether there's a machlokes. We have a machlokes whether anyone disagrees with that Aruch HaShem. According to Rav Avadia Yosef, Rabbeinu Peretz disagrees with it, but according to Tzitz Eliezer, no one disagrees with it. Rabbeinu Peretz is just adding a separate halacha that you're not allowed to go, but Gilui Arosh, you're not allowed to go with your head uncovered into a shul, a separate din in Kavod Beis HaKnesses. That's the issue. Now, how do we paskin? It's very clear. I mean, this would seem to be totally academic. Who cares whether there's a machlokas or not? In Shulchan Aruch it says, Yesh Osrim, and Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote a Yesh Matirim. He doesn't quote anyone who says that it's Mutter. So it should be largely irrelevant whether there is or is not a machlokas, because Allah is very clear that you're not allowed to bring a Sakin Aruch, and we'll get into that a little bit later, a Sakin Aruch into a shul. But it is important to know when something is a machlokas and when it's not, because every once in a while, you might have a situation that comes up where you're looking for how many tzadim there are to be making, how many considerations there are to be lenient. And it's important to know that if a particular topic in halacha is completely subject to machlokas, that will, even though we paskin one way, so we call a snif lahakel. You can always use the shita that's rejected, the shita that is not quoted in Shulchan Aruch, as another possible reason to potentially be makel in certain circumstances.
Why isn't the base of Mikdash the source? You're not allowed to bring one there, and this is a Mikdash Ma'at. Why isn't that quoted as the source?
So it's interesting. This is a Mikdash Ma'at. We don't have all of the halachos of the base of Mikdash in the Mikdash Ma'at. That's what the Gemara says in Sakt Megillah, that, for example, you're not allowed to wear shoes into the Beit HaMikdash. Shach does a beautiful piece on this in Eretz HaTzvi about what the exact geder of Mikdash Ma'at is. But it would seem that it's an insufficient source because we know that a Beit HaMikdash is much more chamor than a Beit HaKnesset. Okay. So we have this machlokas between the Rav Avadia and the Tzitz Eliezer, whether in fact there is a machlokas. From the Beis Yosef itself, it sounds a little bit more like Rav Avadia that they're arguing, because he says, v'hikia alav harav Rabbeinu Peretz. That the Rabbeinu Peretz, it sounds like it's a critique. It's not just Rabbeinu Peretz is adding, oh, by the way, another halacha, but that there's a separate, that the Rabbeinu Peretz in some way has an issue with what the Aruch HaShem says. However, there are many Achronim that have an entirely different girsa in the Rabbeinu Peretz. Rabbeinu Peretz does not say, according to many Achronim, the Elia Rabbah and the Kolbom, the Tashmit, Rabbeinu Peretz does not say that, how do we have Rabbeinu Peretz? What does it say in the top line of it, in the top source over there? Miu ein lachashkiyim begiloi harosh. Many of them say, no. Rabbeinu Peretz says that ein lachashkiyim begiloi. taking out the word harosh. Oh, that changes everything. So what does tiyun begidlo mean? That we only have to worry if it's exposed. What's exposed? The weapon. He's not talking about gilei harosh. He's talking about whether you have an exposed weapon in shul. Now, according to that that girsa, so first of all, there's no machlokas, you're not allowed to have a weapon in shul. And Rabbeinu Peres was qualifying that the issue to have a weapon in shul is only an exposed weapon. That could be very relevant for halacha. Because, first of all, everyone would agree that you're not allowed to have a weapon in shul, but the Rabbeinu Peres would agree that you're allowed to have the weapon if you keep it concealed, and it's not an exposed weapon. So that's a real game changer. The problem is, Shulchan Aruch didn't seem to say that, right? Because when the Shulchan Aruch part of this halacha, Shulchan Aruch said, V'yeshavsum l'karis v'vastak in Aruch, oh, b'rosh megula. He spoke about a rosh megula. So it sounds like he's paraphrasing what he said in Beis Yosef, and clearly he had that text, like he had in Beis Yosef, of Barosh Megula. Nevertheless, the Aruch HaShulchan in Simen Kufnun Aleph in Siv Yud likes this alternate girsa in the Rabbeinu Peretz. He quotes the Beis Yosef of Barosh Megula, and he says, "Ve'eno muvan ma inyan zeh lozeh." What does a Rosh Megula have anything to do with a weapon in shul? And Rosh Megula anyway is aser, he says. What does it have to do with Kavod Beis HaKnesses? He says, it must be, B'sak and Aruch B'Rosh Megula, he says, even if you keep the girsa of Rosh Megula, Rosh Megula is not talking about the human head, She'etzem HaSak and Megula She'ena B'Kis. That the knife, the tip of the knife, should be covered. The shubikis mutter. If you have a holster, then it's going to be mutter. That's why he says dafka sakin aruch. Right? Why does Shulchan Aruch use such a lashon of a sakin aruch? Why not just say any knife? Oh, because a small knife is very easy to conceal. And if it's a concealed weapon, then it's okay. That's how the Aruch HaShulchan seems to understand. Now, what does the Mechaber sound more like? If you look at the Mechaber writes, O Barosh Megula, meaning it sounds like it's after he quotes the din of not bringing a knife into shul, he says, Barosh Megula, sounds like it's a din in Dinei Beis HaKnesses that you shouldn't go in with Gilei Rosh, which is a direct quote from Rabbeinu Peretz. And that's why he brings both dinim in the name of Yesh Ostrim, to be machmir like both shitas. Problem is, the Beis Yosef quotes from Maseches Sofrim, also not to say Ahaskara Barosh Megula, not to say Shem Hashem Barosh Megula. That's got nothing to do with Rabbeinu Peretz, because that, L'chora, doesn't even belong here in Hilchos Beis HaKnesses. The idea that you're not allowed to say Shem Hashem Barosh Megula, that's a din in just mentioning Shem Hashem. But okay, but be that as it may, it seems pretty clear from the Shulchan Aruch, you're not allowed to bring a weapon into shul, and there is a lot of room to argue that if it's a concealed weapon, probably not from the Shulchan Aruch itself, but at least from some of the other Achronim, that if it's a concealed weapon, it would be permissible. But the entire thing, Me'ikara, from the very outset, is an unusual halacha. Because most of the halachas that you have in Shulchan Aruch are based somewhere in a Gemara, in a passage in the Talmud. Now, sometimes there are things that were first introduced by Gaonim or by Rishonim, and the Beis Yosef will tell you, okay, here's the starting point. The starting point is in this Gaon, this Rishon. Over here, his starting point is from the Rishonim. And that strongly implies that there is no Gemara, that there's no Gemara that talks about this. Problem is, it seems that there is a Gemara that talks about this. There's Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin that Pei Beis Amud Aleph, where the Gemara tells us that from the story of Zimri and Kazbi, Vayakom Itocha Eda Vayikach Romach Biado Mikan She'en Nechnasin B'Klei Zayin L'Beis HaMedrash. Rashi says, what does it mean? How do you see from the fact that it says Vayakom Itocha Eda, and he took a Romach Biado, he took a spear, that you see from there that you don't enter a Beis Medrash with weapons? Rashi writes, Mechlal Da'ad Hashta Lav Biado Hava. When you say Vayikach Romach Biado, that implies that right now you're first taking the weapon. Meaning, in the Beis Medrash, you're not allowed to take a weapon. So Pinchas didn't have a weapon on hand because he was sitting and learning. But then he saw what was going on in Zimri and Kazbi, and the Kinas Hashem was Boer Bekirbo. He wanted to do something about it. So he had to go out of the Beit Medrash, and he had to take a weapon. Why didn't he have a weapon anyway? He said, no, let's have a weapon in the Beit Medrash. That lechora is a makar mafurish and shav, that at least in the Beit Medrash you're not supposed to have a weapon. The Gemara makes such a drasha. The Shibalei Alekhet, in fact, writes that the reason that the Gemara tells us Rabbi Yochanan was not al tiparnav in the Beit Medrash, he used to take his fingernails off in the Beit Medrash on chalamoid with his teeth, that he would bite his nails on Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara Moed Katan Daf Yud Ches tells us, so says the Shibalei Alekhet, most people understand that Gemara is telling us the Din Hilchos Chol HaMoed, that you're not allowed to cut your nails with an implement on Chol HaMoed, so that's what you have to do with the Shinur, you have to bite your nails. Says the Shibalei Alekhet, no. It's a Din Hilchos Beis HaKnesses, Hilchos Beis HaMedrash. He was sitting in the Beis HaMedrash, so he couldn't take a knife to cut his fingernails, and that's why he had to dafka use his teeth. Okay, but it does seem that there is a Gemara. So says Marzchis on the spot on that Gemara. He says, I don't understand. He says, Helimu aposkim esenam. The poskim have for some reason ignored this Gemara, which says explicitly that a Beis HaMedrash, and Marzchis writes, a Beis HaMedrash shekedusha so kala mi Beis HaKnesses, which has a lesser kedusha than a Beis HaKnesses, you're not allowed to have a weapon. Kol shekin Beis HaKnesses. He says, if you have a Gemara, it tells you that you're not even allowed to have a weapon in Beis HaMedrash. Kal v'chomer, you're not allowed to have a weapon in a Beis HaKnesses. So the Maritzchayis is asking this kasha on the Beis Yosef, why are you quoting this from the Yelchus Chayim? You have a much better source. You have a Gemara. A Gemara that tells you can't even have it in the Beis HaMedrash. For sure you can't have it in the Beis HaKnesses. The truth is, if you understand like Rav Avadia, that it's machlokas between Yochanan Chaim and Rabbeinu Peretz, and Rabbeinu Peretz will hold what? Then it's mutter to bring a weapon into a Beis HaKnesses. This kasha is a much stronger kasha. It's not just the kasha on the Beis Yosef, why did you bring this source and not that source? It's a stronger kasha on Rabbeinu Peretz. Rabbeinu Peretz holds there's no such answer. It's totally fine. You're allowed to bring a weapon into a shul. But now you have a Gemara that says, no, you're not. So it's a much stronger kasha on Rabbeinu Peretz. But either way, the Maariv Chayis asks this as a kasha. Now the truth is, Maariv Chayis' comment is difficult to understand because he makes a kal v'chomer. What's this kal v'chomer? If you're not allowed to bring into a Beis Medrash, which has lesser kedusha, for sure you're not allowed to bring into a Beis HaKnesses, which has greater kedusha. Is that true? Has he built the hierarchy of kedusha properly? So, okay, now it happens to me that there are certain things that are mutter to do in the Beis Medrash that you're not allowed to do in the Beis HaKnesses. Chamid Chan spend all day in the Beis Medrash, and therefore they're allowed to eat and drink in the Beis Medrash, whereas in the Beis HaKnesses, one is not permitted to even drink. Enochinami, that is true. But what about the Kedusha of the Beis HaKnesses versus the Kedusha of the Beis Medrash? Is that a reflection of lesser Kedusha in the Beis Medrash? That's why you're allowed to eat in the Beis Medrash, because it doesn't have as much Kedusha? It's not about the Kedusha. It's a Gemara Mufreshes, Megillah Dachav Zayinam Beis. The Gemara says that you could turn a Beis HaKnesses into a Beis Medrash, and you can't do the opposite. Why? Because the Beis HaMedrash has greater Kedusha than the Beis HaKnesses, Malim B'Kodesh V'lo Maridin. So the very idea that Marzchai says, that if you're not allowed to bring a weapon into a Beis Medrash, which is a lower level of Kedusha, Kal V'chomer, the Beis Knesses, which is a higher level of Kedusha, not so pashut at all, because it seems that the Beis HaMedrash, in fact, has a higher level of Kedusha. And this is Paskin Mefurish and Shulchan Aruch and some Kufnun Gimel Sif Aleph, about transforming one into the other. Okay, but regardless of whether it's which one is more kadosh, which one is less kadosh, l'chora, the svara should work for both. What's the issue of bringing, what do we say, what was the svara, what was the logic, why are you not allowed to bring a weapon into a shul? What was the svara? Right, well, that tefillah is marich yamav shel adam, and the weapon is mekatan yamav shel adam. Yeah? In the Beis Medrash, would the same svara apply? Sure, Talmud Torah is also marich yamav shel adam. Right, that's the Arichus Yom we just mentioned last night, right? The Gemara in Shabbos Taf Yud Gimel, for those who were there last night, where the Gemara says that there was a Sebrachna Almana whose husband died at a very young age, at the age of 35, and she went around and she was machzik tefillah of me, beis knesset, beis medrash. She took his tefillin around to all the batei knesset and batei midrashos, and she said, "It's k'siv b'Torah ki chayach varchemecha." that it's supposed to be Talmud Torah, supposed to be Yeruch Yom. Ba'ali Shakara, Harbe Vishana, Harbe Vishina, Shalincha Marbe. My husband did so much learning. Mipnei Mameis Bechati Yom, of what happens with Yeruch Yom, meaning she's working with the understanding that the Pasuk says that Talmud Torah is also Yeruch Yom. So there's Yeruch Yom in Talmud Torah, there's Yeruch Yom in Shul as well. So the Chora, the Svara should work for both. And the Aruch HaShulchan writes in some Kufnun Aleph, Torah u'tfila marichin yam av shel adam. So it should be the same when it comes to both. So, and in fact, this halacha would apply not only in a base of Knesset, but in a base of Medrash as well. Now, are there any sources that indicate to the contrary? Are there any sources that would indicate that they somehow were ever allowed to bring a weapon into the base Knesset, base Medrash? So there are a couple of Gemaras, two, maybe three, but probably two Gemaras that seem to indicate this way. There's Gemara in Shabbos of Yitzayim Malach, when it talks about the Yud Ches Davar. There were 18, it's a fascinating idea, that how do we decide that the halacha was like the Beis Hillel as opposed to the Beis Shammai? So there's a baskel that may or may not have been involved in terms of determining how this worked out, but for the most part, it's because Talmidei Beis Hillel, there were more Talmidei Beis Hillel than there were Talmidei Beis Shammai, and they took a vote on things. And the Talmidei Beis Hillel always won every vote. So whether or not L'Asa Davo is passing like Beis Shammai or not, that's an interesting side discussion, but certainly in this world we pass them like the Beis Hillel, because they are the majority. So the Gemara Masechta Shabbos tells us one day they're looking around the Beis Medrash and they see that it's a majority, Talmidei Beis Shammai. So what did they do? They wanted to quickly, let's vote on 18 things. Right? And Beis Shammai won 18 votes that day, because they realized that there were more Talmidei Beis Shammai. So, but the Gemara says more than that. When they saw that Rabbu Talmidei Beis Shammai, Talmidei Beis Hillel, Na'atsu Cherev Beis Medrash, they stuck a sword in the Beis HaMedrash and they said, "Hanichnas yichnas v'ayotzei al yetzei." No one's allowed to leave. Vos ayoma yehillel kafu v'yoshev v'nei Shammai kechem min haTalmidim. Hillel had to sit in front of Shammai like one of the Talmidim. V'yakashal yisol k'yom shenasa bo ha'egel. Okay, we're not going to get into why that's the case, but it was a difficult day for the Jewish people, like the day of the Egel. But what happened? They had a cherev in the Beis HaMedrash. They had a sword in the Beis HaMedrash. That's one counter indicator. The Gemara in Yevamos of Ayin Zayin Amalal tells that Masa ben Yisrael Yisraeli was Chagar Charbo ki Yishmael. He took his sword like a Yishmael and he said, "Kol mi she'eino shomei halacha zu yidak becherev." Anyone who doesn't listen to this halacha will be stabbed by the sword. Kach lum kumblanim vezinu shal shmol aramasi amoni v'lo amonis, moavi v'lo moavis. And he teaches the famous drasha about how the isser of having an amoni or a moavi, bekal Hashem, doesn't apply to a female. So apparently in all these situations, there was a sword in the Beis HaMedrash. In fact, there's another Gemara that seems to indicate something like this Gemara in Sanhedrin, Sidalim and Beis, that Chizkiyahu HaMelech was not a scherev al Pesach Beis HaMedrash, and he said, anyone who's not Osik Petari, Yidakir Becherev Zu. Again, to make a statement, to make a show of the severity of a particular Indian, he took a sword. But in that case, it was al Pesach Beis HaMedrash. Maybe it wasn't in the Beis HaMedrash itself. But the bottom line is, as far as Beis HaMedrash, all the sources in Shas seem to be about Beis HaMedrash, not about Beis Knesset. So it could be the Beis Yosef, whether he could have derived it from the halacha of Beis Medrash or not. Beis Yosef starts with the Yochas Chaim, doesn't start with the Gemara, because he's talking about Hilchos Beis HaKnesses. And that we don't have Mefurish in the Gemara anywhere in Hilchos Beis HaKnesses. We only have Hilchos Beis HaMedrash. It's interesting, the Tshuvas Chaim Das Tzvi, I see Rabbi Mazel found it to put it on the Maror Makovos in Source 11, the Chaim Das Tzvi says that the idea in the Beis Medrash is a totally different idea. It's not because Talmud Torah is Marach Yom of Shel Adam. It's that in Talmud Torah, in a Beis Medrash, there's always arguing. There's a healthy debate in a Beis Medrash. They say, Rav Shechter always likes to tell us the story of a fellow who kept memoirs, some non-Jew who used to keep memoirs of his travels, and he happened to have been on the same train as the Mir Yeshiva when they were running to Shanghai. He was stunned by what he saw. He didn't understand what was going on. And he described in his memoirs that these nice young men would take out these gigantic books, and they'd open up the books, and they'd start yelling at each other and killing each other, and as if like they were enemies, and they couldn't stand each other, and they were fighting, and they were arguing. And then they would close the books, and they're best friends again. And he didn't understand, like, what was going on. That's the Gemara, Mesechus Kiddushin, Esrei V'Sufa, that the, even Shnei Talmidei Chachamim, when they're Osik and learning, they're not some, even Avu B'no, Rabbi Talmido, they're not some Ka'evim Zelazed, they're like enemies with each other, but what's it, but at the end, they're Ohasim. At the end, it creates a certain bond, it creates a certain love, when people learn together. So even if they're fighting the whole way, and you have the Mitzchah D'Oraisa, that's motivating them, but at the end of the day, they become Ohavim. They love each other very much. So says the Chaim Tzvi, because there's so many arguments in the Beis HaMedrash, we want to keep weapons out. We don't want anything to determine the halacha based on, oh yeah, and someone's going to pull out a sword, and then the other one will say, okay, I'm Oda. So that's why it's not their din in the Beis HaMedrash. But in the Beis HaKnesses, it's a different din. Now, this idea that you shouldn't have a mekater etzel hama'arich, that we don't want something that shortens life next to something juxtaposed with that which lengthens life, is not only in this, does not only appear in this context. In fact, it appears in four other contexts in halacha, as far as I know. There may be more. The Mishnah in the third paragraph of the Sefer Mido says that we're not main if barzel al mizbeach. We don't put the barzel iron by the mizbeach. Shar barzel nivra lekatzer yamav shel adam, va mizbeach nivra laharich yamav shel adam, eino bedin sheyunav hamakatzer al amarich. That in making the mizbeach, they couldn't use any iron implements because barzel's nature is to shorten life. The mizbeach is there to lengthen life. The mizbeach is is there for our benefit. We achieve kapara through the mizbeach, and therefore it serves Klal Yisrael. That's what was so objectionable that the Gemara says at the end of Masechta Sukkah of the young lady who came into at the Shas HaChurban, came to the mizbeach and started screaming locust, locust, started hitting it with her shoe. Yeah, and must have to mechala mamonim shel Yisrael. You're just taking away all the Jewish people's money, and people sometimes don't realize that your greatest, they're just thinking financially. Yeah, it costs a lot of money. This is what keeps you alive. This is your greatest help. This is your greatest friend. You wouldn't have made it this far without the Mizbeach. And people are so short-sighted, and they say, how many times you hear people complain about how expensive it is to have a yeshiva? How expensive? Yes, it is. It's sad, and it's difficult, and it's hard. But we should have, the primary conversation is how lucky we are to be able to have yeshivas. That's what keeps us who we are. That's what keeps us Jewish, how fortunate we are to have. But that shouldn't be, the conversation shouldn't always be locus, locus, ad masayat mechala mamonim shel Yisrael. The conversation should be how fortunate we are to have Talmud Torah, even as we're sensitive to the fact that it's something that's very expensive and difficult to maintain. But the primary focus has to be how fortunate we are. So this comes from this idea that the Mizbeach is Marich Yamav Shel Adam. So it's not appropriate to have something that's Mekatzer. Similarly, this notion comes up in the Mishnah Berurah in Simin Yud Aleph. Mishnah Berurah quotes from Magen Avraham in Simin Yud Aleph, in the name of the Shlach HaKadosh, that if a person wants to cut the strings of his tzitzis, let's say he ties the tzitzis and one string is dangling down below the others, one string is too long, so don't cut them with a knife, cut them with your teeth, the Magen Avraham writes, and Machzah Shekel explains, based on those sanif aleihem barzel. The same idea. That the tzitzis has an inyan of arichus yamim. The Gemara in Shabbos Lam and Beis tells us that by von tzitzis meisim banav shalom k'shem katanim, that because of failure in tzitzis, people's children rachman u'tzlan die when they're young. So tzitzis has this segula of arichus yamim, and therefore it's inappropriate to take barzel to tzitzis. In the Sefer Das Nota, he quotes from Chaim Kanievsky that you shouldn't do any circuit mitzvah with barzel. That in general, mitzvahs are marichin yamav shel adam. So you should keep barzel away from any mitzvah. That's the question. Do you look at a particular mitzvah and say, this mitzvah is misugo for good things and for arichus yam? I remember when we were learning Hilchos Mezuzah, because of Shechter, so there are many, many sources that seem to indicate, I'm sure the guys in the Kollel have come across, that seem to indicate that mezuzah has, in addition to being a mitzvah, it has a certain skula of protection, that it protects. But Rav Shechter, whenever we came across such a maramakom, he would say, all mitzvahs protect. All mitzvahs protect. Meaning, like he didn't like the idea to single out a particular segula within a single mitzvah. Meaning, all mitzvahs give arichus yamim. All mitzvahs protect. All mitzvahs do all the good things. That he was very adamant about that, despite what seems.
Right? Right?
Yeah, I'm saying, yeah, it singled out all over the place. But I don't know, he was very bothered by it for some reason, I don't know. So, yeah, similar to this idea. So at least by Tzitzis, you have this idea of Ma'arich and Yamash Shal Adam. You know, the Magen Avraham also writes that that Daf could cut with the teeth, the Tzitzis with the teeth, because there are 32 teeth, which is the same number as the strings in the Tzitzis, so it's somehow there's some connection to the two. Kavachayim writes that there's a Segula when you Mekayim Mitzvah Tzitzis, that you're not going to have problems with your teeth, which is a school I'm still waiting to take effect for me. I'm trying to be very mocked with terrible teeth, but it's also a school not to eat so much sugar, I guess. But you have to. So that, but again, you see a second application of this din of a makatzer itzal amarich. There's another application based Yosef Narachaim Simin Kufay quotes Rokeach and Simin Shin Lamed Beis that at the time of Birch Samazin you should cover the night because the little son of Aleim Barza. And the Eino Din, Shiyanaf HaMekatzer Al HaMarich, you shouldn't have that which is Mekatzer next to that which is Marich. The knife is Mekatzer Yom HaShal Adam, and your table is Marich Yom HaShal Adam. How is your table Marich Yom HaShal Adam? I would say because that's where you eat, and you need to eat to live. No, because Shulchan K'mizbeach. A Shulchan is like a Mizbeach, that's what Gemara Chagiga tells us, and that's the Abu Dram writes the same thing, and the Shebelei Aleket as well. And then the Shebelei Aleket writes, that mipi achaver Rabbi Simcha shamati tamacher. So there's another reason why to cover the knife by Birch Samazon, because pamach hasayach mevarich Birch Samazon. One time someone was benching, this is probably the more famous reason, ukshigil birchas banu Yerushalayim, when he got to the bracha of banu Yerushalayim, v'nizkar churban abayis, and he remembered the churban abayis, loka chasakin v'tako v'bitna. He took the knife and he stabbed himself with the knife. And therefore, v'al kein nogu l'salka b'shas bracha. So the minute we came, we take the knife off the table, the Shas Bracha. We don't want someone to get so agitated at Bani Yerushalayim that they're going to chas shalom, that they'll hurt themselves. So Bali Milzer all point out, because one Meshuggah once decided to stab himself, so now for all times we have to remove the side. I promise you, I am not at risk of stabbing myself over the Bracha of Bani Yerushalayim. You know, it's making several assumptions. It's making an assumption that you're paying attention when you're benching. Right? It's making an assumption that that your mamish misabel over your shalim, that it's something that really bothers you. And it's making an assumption that it bothers you to that point. That I mean, this L'chora would never have happened again in history. So that's what the Bali Musa point out. No, the point is not to protect us. The point is to remind us that there was once a Jew who cared so much about Korban Yerushalayim, that it agitated him to the point that he was willing to stab himself. But anyway, both of these reasons are mentioned in the Orchus Chaim, and But that first reason, again, is this idea of Los Tanafale and Barzel, they shouldn't have a Mekatzer with a Marech. A fourth application of the rule, Mishabur writes in Simin Reish Vav, in Sivkan Yilches, Alderach HaKabbalah, not to stick a knife into a Prisha Mevarech Alav, even if you hold the knife with your right hand, and the Shulchan Aruch Harav explains, because they are shnei hafechim benosei echad. You have two opposite forces over here. The yamin is totzas hachayim, the sakin is the koach of esav, that's mekatzer chayim. So on some Kabbalistic level, that those two don't jive with each other. But bottom line is, this is not a this is not something that's unique to the halachos of Beis HaKnesses. We have this idea of mekatzer and marich, not to juxtapose them. Okay, fine. Now, what's the nature of this din? Is this a din dafka in dine Beis HaKnesses? Is this a din in dine tefillah? And as we pointed out, two major naftaminas. Let's say I don't daven in a shul, I daven at home. Or let's say I go to a shul, but not to daven. I go to a shul because I want to pick something up, I want to do something else, I want to fix something, trying to help out in the shul. Right, I'm doing something else in the shul. So, l'chora, both tefillah and Beis HaKnesses have the capacity to be married. I mean, you can't tell from the svara whether it's a din in tefillah or a din in Beis HaKnesses. Gemara Brachos and Dalar and Beis tells us, Amar Yehuda, Shlosha Dvarim Hamarich Ben Marich in Yom HaVishnos Shel Adam. There are three things that if you are ma'arich in these things, it will give you a long life. Hamarich Bitfilaso, Hamarich Al Shulchan, Hamarich Beis HaKisa. But you see, Marich Bitfilaso is one of these things. Now, if you look in the Ben Yoyad over there, he says, it's not really about having long life. Marach Yom HaShalad over there means that you should have a more comfortable, fulfilled life. That a person who lives with anxiety can feel like life is very difficult for them. for a person who lives with a certain serenity, with a certain calmness, certain bitachon, life is much more comfortable. And that's what Ben Yoyada says, that's what Ma'arich and Yamav means. And a person who's Ma'arich B'Tfilasa means that he's Boteach B'Hashem. That when a person has bitachon, they tend not to get easily agitated. They maintain an equilibrium a lot better because they know that it's all in the Ribbono Shel'olam's hands. And even though things don't seem to be breaking the way they want them to, but you know, ultimately we know that the Ribbono Shel'olam is in control. And that's what Ma'arich B'Tfilasa means. But you see, the Pashut reading of the Gemara is that Tfila is this skula for Arichas Yamim. We also find the Gemara about Pesach Knesset, though. Gemara in the earlier Daf Ches tells us that they said to Rabbi Yochanan, Ika Sabi B'Bavel. You should know that there are some old people in Bavel. So he says, what do you mean? L'mayn yirbu yimeichem v'yimei v'neichem al ha'adama. It says that Arichas Yamim happens al ha'adama. It shouldn't happen in Bavel, not in Chutz La'aretz. So he said, no. These people go to shul a lot. They're maktmi, or mechashvi, b'batik nesiyos. They come early and they stay late in shul. Oh, now I understand. Now I understand how they're tzavi b'badal, how they're old people in badal. Because you see that the shul has this ability of, has this segula of arichus yamin. So Tzitz Eliezer writes in the Tshuvan, chelik yudzim in yuchesos gimel, that either one, meaning l'chari, you shouldn't have a weapon by either one, not by shul and not during davening, regardless. Rav Vadya, in his tshuva, says that it's only when it's both, that the sakin is mekatzer and the tefillah is ma'arich, and so it's tefillah being ma'arich, and also Beis HaKnesses, not because Beis HaKnesses is ma'arich, but because it covered Beis HaKnesses. So it's just not proper cover for Beis HaKnesses to walk in with a weapon. But if you only have one factor and not the other, then it wouldn't be enough to aser. So what are the various interim? When are we, again, the most obvious answer is Pikuach Nefesh. Leaving out Pikuach Nefesh, are there any other interim? So we already mentioned Kisoy HaSakin, covering the knife. Some have the Girsan Rabbeinu Peretz, that's Muslim, that you're allowed to go in with the knife that's covered. Mishaburu quotes the Salacha. Mishaburu and Simukuf Nanal, Sukkan Chafbez, quotes from the Elia Rabbah that we're only machmir if it's an exposed weapon, but a concealed weapon is perfectly fine. In fact, in Chuvas Or L'Tzion, Rabbi Tzion Abba Shaul writes that the same is true for not only for a knife, the same is true for a gun as well, that if you cover it, it's concealed, then it's going to be okay. Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein has in Chashuk Echemet, anyone ever meet Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein? The sweetest Jew in the world to meet. If you ever go to Eretz Yisrael, and he's pretty accessible. He has a kollel in Cholon, and Cholon is not known as a Haredi hotbed. You know, I don't know how he ended up in Cholon. There's a story there. It's like all Chilonim around, and he's got this yeshiva where like Chiloni families, a yeshiva katana, like not yeshiva katana, or Israel yeshiva katana, like high school. I mean, like what we call yeshiva katana, like little kids. And his kollel's on the top floor of the yeshiva. And these kids, I asked the people there, they said they all come from Chiloni families, and they're so taken by Zilberstein's sweetness that the families came along for the ride. They just, and the children are turning over the family. It's an amazing thing to see. And then you sit with him, and like the smile, and the erlichkeit. So he's very geschmack. I'm sure you've heard from Brandon many times from Yitzchak Zilberstein. You know, he has these very enjoyable shailas and these very interesting things. As geschmack as he is in writing, much more geschmack in person. You know, sometimes people are more geschmack in writing than even more in person. Such a special Jew. So Yitzchak Zilberstein writes in Chashuk Echemet on Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Tei Beis, he brings a raya that it's usher, even to, that a concealed weapon should be usher as well. That a neshek that's concealed should be usher as well, because Pinchas hid the romach mitachas from Avusha, that they shouldn't know that he's coming, right? And what does it say? The Gemara makes the drasha that he only took it after, because he couldn't have it in the base medrash, but it was concealed. So what do you mean he could only have it? That's Zilberstein's raya. But nevertheless, I mean, the Mishnah Berurah passes that you can. So we pass along the Mishnah Berurah. But nevertheless, it's a pretty good kasha, though, on that. What? It was strategic, yeah, but if it was going to be concealed anyway, then the Gemara makes a big deal about the fact that he couldn't do what he was doing. It had to be Vayikach. He couldn't have had it in the Beis Medrash. That's the other issue. The Taz writes in some Kuvnanals of Kanbeis, another had to, the Shulchan says you shouldn't have a sakin aruch, a long knife. What if it's a short knife? So So the Taz writes that a short knife is mutter. The Taz actually writes a little different. He talks about in Hilchos Hamazon, it doesn't say anything about a Sakan Aruch. In Hilchos Hamazon, it says remove the knife from the table. Just remove the knife. It doesn't say big knife, small knife, just remove the knife. So the Taz writes that by Birch Hamazon, it's very easy to cover the knife. By Beis HaKnesses, it's a tircha to remove the knife entirely and then to pick it up again. And they were only matriach us if it's takan aruch, because probably if you're carrying a long knife, what do you really need it for? But a little takan knife is something you may need. It may have utility, so we're not going to be matriach. But we're only matriach a person to get rid of a long knife. So it turns out, according to the Taz, that if there's a tremendous tircha in removing the knife, that's also a hetzer. Why is this relevant? I remember when I learned in yeshiva, and I saw it in a yeshiva called Keren B'Yavne, which was the first hezer yeshiva, and there were guys all the time that would come back from the army, and they to visit yeshiva, and they'd come with neshek. Now, if they would leave their gun just outside on the floor when they came into the Beis Medrash, they'd be court-martialed, and they'd be thrown into a dungeon for a month or something. I don't know. They'd be in big trouble. It's not. I don't know what the Israeli army does to them, but they leave their gun. They're not allowed to leave their gun, right? They're not allowed to leave their gun, and it's not pashtut too. So some of the heads of yeshivas have lockers outside with you get your own combination and you can leave. Okay, but if the yeshiva doesn't have such a thing, l'chora that's a big tircha, and that might be a heter, and that's mistama what they were samichat, because they used to always walk in, and you can't conceal it. They had these gigantic guns that they were wearing on their backs. They couldn't conceal the weapon. Another heter of Vadi Yosef discusses the chayal. He says whether a chayal is dafka allowed to wear a gun, and he suggests based on the Aruch Shulchan writes in Hilchos Shabbos that it's, the Aruch Shulchan says not a violation of carrying on Shabbos when you carry a weapon, because if you're a soldier, because it's part of the uniform. So Rav Avadya says hesitant to rely on that for Hilchos Shabbos, but maybe for this, maybe, and why? So now we come full circle. Rav Avadya says, because anyway, this whole din is machlokas rishonim. Half the rishonim say that Ben Peretz doesn't hold this whole din to begin with. So we could be so mech that it's just like clothing when it comes to a chayav. Very interesting. That's Rav Avadya l'shitaso. He thinks that it's a machlokas. Remember we said at the beginning, Tzitzel Yosef, there is no machlokas over here. Everyone agrees to it. So Rav Avadya, who thinks that it's a machlokas, says anyway, the whole thing's machlokas, so we could be so mech to be mekel for a chayav. The other hetter that they have is the Tshuvas Torah L'Shma writes that if they're sharpening shechita knives, or you're teaching, learning Hilchos Shechita, and you want to show how to check a knife, or something like that, that's Melech HaShamayim, and that's mutter. So when it's done for the sake of Melech HaShamayim, it's mutter. But all of this was just about, I should point out, what if a person wants to go to shul, and they're carrying the chayal, has his gun, and he doesn't want to rely on the idea, let's say he's a Tzitzel Yezer person, so he doesn't think the whole thing is machlokas, and he doesn't want to rely on the idea that it's just clothing. So what's better to do, right? Is it better to walk into shul with a gun so that at least you could daven b'tzibur? Or is it better to daven b'yechidus outside? So that's an interesting discussion. The Sefer Tzedakah U'Mishpat, it's quoted in the Sefer Pesukei Tshuvos, he has a discussion about this. L'chora, that depends on how you view tefillah b'tzibur. Is tefillah b'tzibur a chiyuv? Or is tefillah b'tzibur, like Rav Shach likes to say, the icing on the cake? Meaning it's a great way to enhance your tefillah and to have your tefillah be niskadol, but it's not a chiyuv. This happens to be machlokas between Rav Moshe and the Emek Bracha. Rav Moshe holds tefillah b'tzibur is a chiyuv. The Emek Bracha says, no, it's not a chiyuv. He has rayos. If you look in the Emek Bracha, and it was a Talmud Briska Rav, and in Yoni Kriya Shema Os Aleph, he explains that it's not a chiyuv. Now, I only left like 3 minutes to discuss Shabbos. What about Shabbos? How does any of this change on Shabbos? So Shabbos, you really have two issues. One, if there's no Erev, you have a carrying issue. Okay, so that's taka an issue. That's really a legitimate problem. The other area you have, the other issue, which is more common, because most Orthodox communities have some sort of Erev that people rely on. The other issue that you have is a muktzah issue. And this is a fascinating discussion. Right after the Harnof massacre, I went to see Yitzhak Zilberstein, and I asked him, because a chaver from my shul wanted to start carrying weapons to shul, and I said, I'm going to be in Eretz Yisrael, I'll ask the Gedolei Eretz Yisrael, see what they think. So I asked Yitzhak Zilberstein about carrying a weapon on Shabbos, whether it's muktzah, and he said, it's klisha malachta laheter. It's something you use for a davar mutz. It's like a fork, a knife, you know, like a plate. A kli shel malach lehetzer. So he says there's no issue of mutzah. Kli shel malach lehetzer, you're not allowed to be metalful for nothing, the Shulchan Aruch writes. But you don't need tzorach gufo, tzorach makomo. It could just be for any minor movement that you want. It's just a certain fidget, I guess, or something with the kli shel malach lehetzer. But he said, I said, how could it be kli shel malach lehetzer? You fire a firearm, it's got to be a malach d'oraisa. He says, yeah, but when would you ever fire a firearm? If it's the Koch Nefesh, that's Hetzer. So it's Klisha Machtel Hetzer. I told that to Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter was not at all pleased with that. Rav Schechter thought that that's not at all the pasuk. I mean, if you think about it, I don't know if anyone here owns a firearm, but if you own a firearm, 99.9% and hopefully 100% of the time that you ever fire that firearm is practice, right? That's not because that's practice. So l'chora, it's not really a klishim lachul. I had to reshaf the thought of klishim lachul iser. Then you get into the discussion, okay, what do you have to do with klishim lachul iser? Something that you generally use for an iser, a hammer, is a klishim lachul iser. So in Shulchan Aruch and Sim Shin Ches, Shulchan Aruch paskins, that if you want to crack a nut, you're allowed to take a hammer to crack a nut. Why? Because it's l'tzorach gufo. You're using the klishim lachul iser, but you need to use it for a mutter purpose on Shabbos. And you're allowed to. You're allowed to move the kli shel malach lehetzer, the tzorach gufo or the tzorach makomo. If you need the space that it's occupying, or you need to use it for a mutter reason. So then the question becomes, okay, is carrying a weapon for security, does that fit the category of tzorach gufo? It's very interesting because it's not typical tzorach gufo. You're not using it at all, hopefully. Right? It's to have it on you. That's why you're carrying it. But at the same time, meaning that is the tzorach gufo, meaning the way a weapon is used is to have it on you, to have it for security. So I think, if I recall correctly, and don't quote me on this, if I recall correctly, Rav Schechter thought that it was ultimately mutter, for security reasons. I don't remember if it was because he held that it was the tzorach gufo or because he held that it taka does rise to the level of sakana where everything is going to be mutter, and certainly mutz is going to be mutter. Mordechai Rabbi Rav Willig is very against the idea of having people in the shul who are armed, even though we have in my shul, because Nassau County Security Police Force did not think it was a bad idea, but Rabbi Willig was very against it, and I asked him about it, and he said, in Eretz Yisrael, it's one thing. In Eretz Yisrael, people have had years of training in the army how to use a gun. He said, in the United States, someone's going to go to target practice in a controlled environment with the earmuffs on and like this with two hands, and then he's going to know how to shoot at a target. And what's going to happen when something really happens in a real life, under fire, in a real life circumstance? He said, it's more likely they're going to hurt somebody else in the shul with a gun than they're going to be able to provide protection. So that's, again, that was Rav Willig's approach. Many others disagree. So in my shul, we actually have people that carry weapons because Nassau County told us that they've reviewed the security, you know, the training protocols of the security, that they had, and they were comfortable that it'd be okay. What they were most concerned about, the Nassau County Police Department was most concerned about, is that if someone calls the police are going to respond, and they're going to take out the guy with the gun. Meaning, they don't know who the terrorist is. So he said, you have to have some clear indicator. So they have some sort of sash that they wear that's neon or something that says security on it, so that if God forbid it would ever come to such a thing. But as Rabbi Brandis said before, all of this should be Mirtz Hashem, la'alacha v'lo v'maitza, and we should be zocha. We should all recognize that the ultimate protection, no matter what ishtadlus we do, the ultimate protection comes only from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the Ribbono Shel Olam should continue to protect all of his children.